Radio.
Let's get soft if you wanna get soft with it.
Sometimes you feel you gotta love somebody, and that somebody is you. Sometimes we feel we need to touch somebody, touch somebody.
Soft if you wanna get soft with it.
Hey.
Welcome to Let's Get Soft.
Emotional Hangs. Now, you've heard that theme song many times at this point, but Kurt and I just heard it for the first time today because we recorded a bunch of these episodes all at once, and then we put that theme song in today for the first time. And
I love it.
They're going to go back and put it into all the older ones we did.
But I feel like it just sounds like early Ween, which I was a big fan of early Ween.
Well,
talking about 1992.
Kurt,
1991.
As the sole composer and performer of that song that I did for us.
Yeah.
You can say thank you at any point.
I really feel like, you know, you told me I was saying how much I loved it earlier, and then you're like, yeah, I just did it this morning. It only took me an hour. And then I kind of like dialed back how appreciative I was that I was like, maybe it should have taken 2 hours. You know,
No. I wasn't bragging like, oh, it only took me. I was just saying, like, it came together very quickly,
uh-huh.
And I was grateful for that.
I guess that's what they say about a Stairway to Heaven. You know, we wrote that in 10 minutes.
Well, it was stolen, so they did. But I'm glad you like the song.
It does. It feels like early Ween, and also I like that because of the fact that you grew up in Philly, I grew up in Jersey. We shared, I think, Shitty Gardens, which was a club in Trenton. New Jersey.
Well, it's called City Garden. It was called City Gardens.
Shitty Gardens. Come on. Everybody called it Shitty Gardens.
Well, that was a nickname, yeah. But I actually have the book, the published history, oral history of City Gardens in my bathroom. It's one of my bathroom readers.
Yeah.
And that is crazy.
And it was my first, like, show I ever went to. I went to concerts. It was my first show when I was, I think, 15 years old, seeing Ween at City Gardens.
But I never made it over to City Gardens.
You never went to City Gardens?
No, because I
just have the fucking book? Well, fucking poser.
Somebody gave me the book.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were friends with the guys that compiled it. But I grew up on the Philly side of things, so I went, the Trocadero was my spot. And the TLA. You know, we had a bunch of venues in Philly, so I saw everything there. And I also wasn't into punk enough at the time that I would have made it over to City Gardens. I was a little more rock punk versus straight punk. And City Gardens was pretty much hardcore and punk.
Yeah.
Like, there, you know.
I remember the only time I've ever been to the Trocadero before playing there was Pigface. Do you remember Pigface?
I do.
That was like an industrial outfit with Genesis Peorage and Skinny Puppy.
Yeah.
It was a crazy show.
Yeah, I was never into that kind of music.
I really wasn't. I had a buddy who was, but also a totally worthwhile show.
Okay, cool.
That's right off the top. So, Emotional Hangs, again, this is a show where Joe and I, we get vulnerable with each other about our friendship.
Yeah, it's about adult friendship, transparency, adults sharing feelings for once instead of hiding them and competing in their suburban battleground. Two men being open. So, folks, on the count of three, one, two, three,
let's get soft! All right, first up, we have one of our favorite segments. It's called You're Forgiven.
Yes.
Should I go first?
It's called I Forgive You, actually.
Oh, I Forgive You. And it's where we kind of like, we air something that where we feel like we fucked up a little bit or feel bad about and are kind of carrying that guilt around.
And not with the other person. It's just something from our past,
yeah.
A past incident between us and somebody else.
And this is pretty minor. I'll tell you mine. But it even though it was minor, I thought about it a lot.
Now, hold on a second.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to go out of order here.
No problem.
But before we get into this,
yeah.
What's the latest update on your therapy thing? Because your quest for therapy came out of the first episode one version of I Forgive You.
I've got an appointment.
Whoa!
I got an appointment. It's 3 days from now. So if you guys are listening, you guys are listening to these kind of 1 week at a time. It's not been that long. It hasn't taken me 6 weeks to get this fucking appointment. It took me like 2 weeks.
Okay.
But I finally have the appointment. I'm going in and I was really thinking about it like, I'm excited to think about it. I've been thinking about like dreams, recurring dreams. Like the only recurring dream I ever had as a child, I still remember it. And I'm like, fuck, I'm going to start off with that because it's pretty insane and I can't believe that I still remember it.
Okay. What is it?
It's that there's two parts to it. One is I'm a balloon and I'm walking down this like cartoon version of like suburban wasteland.
Uh-huh.
And I'm walking along like fences on either side, and it's just like a big grid of fences and then grass in the squares, but there's no houses.
Right.
And then in the far distance there's what looks like construction of like a new suburban area, and it's
right.
all mud on the hillside. And I see two bulldozers, one big one and one small one. And as I'm walking up, I realize, again, I'm a balloon, I'm a red balloon. And then as I get up to it, I realize that I'm actually also this tiny bulldozer. And my mom is the big bulldozer, but then we're also shitting. We're not pushing dirt around with the front. We're shitting shit out the back as we like move around, and that whole hillside is just shit.
Ooh. Jesus Christ! Now, yeah.
So
can I?
Can't wait to tell her that. Have her tell me. What's wrong with me?
This will be a fun thing for later. Can I take a stab at the interpretation and then she,
please.
Then
yeah.
you tell her, me, us later what she says?
Yeah.
I think the balloon signifies that with the balloon against the bulldozers, it
yeah.
symbolizes that you're delicate. You have a fear. I'm serious.
Okay.
You have a fear, because a bulldozer would just pop a balloon,
yeah.
and there are these big, strong, mechanical things up in front of you,
yeah.
and then you're going towards them, and you're just this balloon, so there's this fear of vulnerability, I could get popped, whatever. You get up to the hill, you realize the thing you're afraid of is your mom,
uh-huh.
that she might pop you or hurt you,
uh-huh.
and then you realize, I'm not a balloon, I'm a little bulldozer. I have to rise to the occasion. I have to be more than I am to make my mom happy.
Uh-huh.
I have to be better. I have to, you know, be this and that and play a role. And then you start doing the job and you're, it's just shit coming out the back and you're failing your family or the people you look up to.
Well, I mean,
that's
let's
your
find
fear.
Out.
I'm not saying that's what you've done.
I understand. I'm interested to find out because everything you said doesn't ring true to me. But I'll be interested in seeing.
All right.
And also, she might just be like, "Yeah, it's a weird dream. Doesn't mean anything." Do you have it anymore? No. Okay. Fine. Move on. So
it's a heavy dream. All right. So
it's a heavy dream. So yeah. So I'm
we'll
gonna
get
be
back
going
to that.
I can't wait to go.
All right. So now that we've done a brief recap. Let's get into I Forgive You.
Okay. So mine's going to start off like pretty douchey. All right. Are you ready for that?
Well, yeah. And they usually do because it's...
No, I mean just the circumstances.
Oh, okay.
I'm at Sundance last weekend.
Oh, God.
it's the first time
you
I've ever gone.
Harvey Weinstein.
Harvey was there.
Yeah, having a margarita.
We were having a mimosa, Joe. And Harvey turns to me. No.
Yeah.
I was there with this movie, The Big Sick, that our buddies Kumail and Emily wrote, and they did very well. It was,
yeah, I heard.
You know, everyone was thrilled. But
good.
Watched the movie with them. It was what a treat to see them have so much success. And then mm-hmm. we're at this party, and so also I have to say that you know the pussy hats that people were wearing for the Women's March,
yeah,
you know, the pink hats. So
yeah.
I didn't realize that it was like. I thought they were just supposed to look like vaginas. I didn't realize that they're like little cat ears, and that's why they're pussy hats. So it's like pink, like a vagina. But then,
oh, I didn't realize that either. I thought they were just vagina hats.
I just thought they were vagina hats, but
yeah.
No, they're also supposed to be like cat hats, and that's
okay.
why like little girls are wearing them because it's like it's a pussy hat.
Yeah, it's
you know?
Not appropriate for a little girl to wear.
Definitely, little girls were definitely wearing.
Yeah,
them.
It's and by the way, all you people.
Whoa, right away. All you people.
But no, there were certain people at the march. I thought the march was a really great thing. But, you know, don't give your kid a sign, your 4-year-old a sign to hold that says fuck on it. Can
yeah.
you please?
Yeah, I agree.
Can you please have some fucking class.
Give your kid a sign that says, Big Bird doesn't want the wall
built.
Yeah,
don't put the vagina hat on your five-year-old.
but that's the thing. It's not. That's the reason. It's not a vagina hat.
It's still. It's like. It's
regardless.
Like, it's like that. It's a bubblegum joint. It's not a real joint. It's filled with big... Just don't do it. It's not appropriate.
Okay, so this is... So this is the situation I'm in. I think that the hats are vaginas. And we're, you know, having some drinks, having some fun. And then Nick Offerman is there, who I've never met before. And I'm a big fan of his.
Uh-huh.
And so he comes over and like Kumail's like, come on, we're going to go up and get a drink. And I'm like, yeah. And then we're moving through the crowd together. And Nick Offerman's got one of the pussycat hats or the pussy hats on. And he says, hey, man, you were really funny in the movie. And I go, thanks. I love your pussy hat. You better be careful. I might try and fuck your head later. And he just looked at me fucking with disgust and then turned and walked away. And then we didn't even get drinks together. It
you
was
know what,
like,
Kurt?
What?
Go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry.
What annoyed me and upset me about it is that it's not even my sense of humor. It's just like it just came out of my mouth really fast.
Uh-huh.
And it, because it feels like such a fucking frat boy thing to say. And that's not even my sense of humor, you know? And I just feel like I misrepresented myself in that moment. And for some reason, I just kept playing it back over and over again because I really respect the guy. And I was like, I made a fucking dumb joke that kind of was like, he's wearing this hat in support of women. And then I was like, I'm going to rape you.
That's not what you were saying. Kurt.
Yes.
I do not forgive you.
You don't? What? This is the whole point of this fucking thing.
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why I don't.
Why?
Because you don't need to be forgiven. That guy was being a dick, and that's his fucking problem. You didn't do anything wrong.
No.
You made a stupid joke to a guy wearing a vagina hat.
It's
and then he's going to act like you're an asshole for it? I got a lot to say about this. This whole scenario annoys the shit out of me.
He didn't, and also, it wasn't like, here's the worst part. It wasn't like he took offense to it. It was more like he immediately wrote me off as like a person worthy of talking.
There was nothing to be offended by. You were clearly making a stupid joke, not meaning the quality of the joke is stupid, meaning you were being like, I'm being a jackass, I'm being ironic. Obviously, I'm not going to try to fuck your head. It's a fucking joke.
But it's a bad joke. It's not even a good joke.
It's fine, though. My point is you're being ironic and stupid.
Yeah.
Like, on purpose.
Right.
You weren't being... And even if you weren't doing it on purpose...
I was like, ha, ha, ha. But...
That's his problem, man. That's his problem. I don't like that he was wearing the hat in the party.
Why don't you like, I think it's cool that he's wearing
because
the hat.
That is a pose and a half. That is a, hey everybody, look, I'm the guy wearing the vagina hat at the party because I get it.
But that's cool. I think it's not cool.
It's like having a bumper sticker on your car that says who you voted for. It's not cool. You don't need to wear it on your fucking sleeve. Wear the hat at the march. You're walking around at a goddamn party at Sundance with that hat on because you want attention and you want people to go, what a guy. Man, what a guy. Boy, does he support the genders. That's what you want out of that. That is an attention-seeking fucking thing to do. I'm sorry. It is. I support that. I supported every one of those marches 110%. I thought they were fucking amazing. I followed them online.
Did you go to one?
No, I didn't go to one. I would have loved to have gone to the DC one. I wasn't going to go to one of the satellite ones. In fact, I didn't even know the satellite one was happening in LA till the night before.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't go. But I thought they were a great thing. I thought they were a great display of, you know, my mom certainly leans more right than left. And I really admired when she said this. She was like, you know, that's democracy. Like, she had this really great,
Old
school take on it, even though we don't really agree a lot politically. She was like, that's democracy. It was peaceful and people expressed themselves and there was no violence. And it was, I agree. Like, I thought, I leaned left, but I thought that was very, very cool.
Yeah.
So I have no issue with anybody
I thought it was awesome.
Support unless it's wearing the hat at a fucking Sundance party.
I think what you're saying is bullshit. Because here's why I think you're saying is bullshit. That's the same fucking pose that I got in high school from like the jock kids when I would like wear weird shoes or something. It's like, you're just trying to fucking be weird.
No, it's not.
And get attention.
It's not.
And then it's just like, fuck you, I'm expressing what I care about the world.
No, it's not. It's not the same thing. Your clothes aren't a statement about your politics.
Yes, everything's a statement about your politics.
No, that's not true.
Do you like you have a tattoo that says things that you like?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a statement of your politics.
Yeah. Okay. And I'll tell you what. When I go to a temporary tattoo artist and I go, do me a favor. I'm going to be at a Sundance party tonight. And usually this is the kind of thing that would be hidden by my sleeves. And I would only bring it up if it came up in conversation. But I want you to put that Pro Zappa tattoo across my forehead. So everybody that looks at me.
That's the difference.
That is the difference.
Is that you have it on your arm and he was wearing it on his head.
That's the difference. You're at a fucking Sundance industry party. Okay, fine. I'll give you this. And here's what proves what I'm saying.
Okay.
You make a dumb joke to the guy and he's a fucking asshole about it. Like, I'm above that, pal. I don't know if you saw my hat, but I'm enlightened.
Also.
That's shitty, man.
This is so much of your own fucking shit that you're bringing to
this. It's not my own shit. That's shitty.
Yes, it is. Because also, he might have just been like, okay, bad joke, but I'm moving on. I honestly feel like I put all that shit on myself. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, that's a joke that I'm not proud of. And that's how I opened the conversation. And now the conversation has been closed because of that joke.
Look, anybody that closes a conversation over a dumb joke, I'm sorry. I don't care for it. I think it's a snotty, snotty, snotty thing to do. It's snotty. It's exclusive. And hey, Mr. Open-minded pussyhead. Hey, buddy. Where's your open-mindedness now? Where's your acceptance now? Oh, it ends when somebody makes a joke you don't like? Or that you think is stupid? Now all of a sudden this person doesn't deserve respect? I'm telling you, I'm right on this. I'm 100% right.
No, you're way too angry about the fact that he was wearing the hat. I think it's cool that he was wearing the hat at the party. I think that's important that men actually show support for this movement. Yeah,
of course men need to show support for this movement. That's not how you show it.
Why not?
So you think if somebody was walking around that party with a sandwich board on that said, I love Trump or I love Hillary or whatever, or you would think that was an appropriate time to be doing that?
But also, if someone was wearing a Make America Great hat again, do you know what I mean? Like, I defend their right to wear that hat.
Of course they have a right. I still think they were an idiot for doing it at a goddamn party like that. For doing it, and just do it at the place. Wear your thing at the rally, okay? I'm sorry. I feel strongly about this. I have my political views. I don't put them on my bumper car with bumper stickers.
No, but you do tattoo them on your body.
Kurt, it's so different. A tattoo on your body that's covered 90% of the time by and I don't put my political beliefs on my body. I have a Zappa tat. That's as close as I have. I have a Death Star in the back of my arm. Where are my political beliefs?
Well, still, it's like a belief. It's just like, hey, I want you to know, I love Zappa. I'm pretty smart and weird.
And people see that for about maybe 2 months out of the year at certain times of the day. I'm not wearing it on my head.
I don't think it's different.
I think
it's
people with
different
face tattoos are fucking idiots.
There was. I love the neck tattoo that's obviously the name of their son. I love that because it's like, I had a kid and I wanted to make sure that I could never get a job that's not customer service. I wanted to make sure that my kid would definitely have a dad who has to have certain specific types of jobs or ones that involve wearing a turtleneck.
Somebody told me a story yesterday.
Yes.
And this is what I'm talking about. They were out at a party,
mm-hmm.
and they were introducing a friend to another friend. And the other friend goes, so this person's the person in the middle being like, hey, so-and-so, meet so-and-so.
Yeah.
After this person introduces the two of them, one of this person's friends goes to the new person they're just meeting, goes, So who'd you vote for?
And
it's
whoa.
Like, dude, it's like, stop.
Well, that's a crazy thing to start
well,
a conversation
but that's
with.
My point. That's my point. You don't 24 hours a day have to wave your flag in the air.
But also, it was the weekend of the Women's March. There was a point to it. It was happening there the next day.
All right, good. Well, you know, good.
All right.
Good.
What's your...
I'm trying to defend you. Guy was a dick to you. Wasn't a dick to me. I never met the guy.
All right. What's your? I forgive you. Give it to me.
How did he? He didn't say anything.
No. And also, it's a loud party. You know what I mean? Like he wasn't like go fuck yourself. He was just like, oh well, we're not going to continue this conversation. You know, like, and we were kind of moving through a crowd. It was a crowded party. Ugh. It was really me more it's like feeling like. Inward. It just made me go like, boo.
Yeah, there's a reason it made you do that. Because it was shitty, what he did.
No, it's fine.
That's what it is.
Go. What's yours?
Well, mine's got to do with my mom.
Okay. Hey, somebody's lucky to have a mom. Ba-boom! I got a dead mom! Ba-boom!
Oh, God.
Ba-boom!
You should tell Nick Offerman that.
Yeah, I should have just been like, oh, yeah, my dead mom.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't even say anything else.
And then he would have went, your dead mom and my mustache. I sound like Ron Burgundy all the time. Anyway, oh, boy, if Nick Offerman ever hears this, I'm done.
You're done.
I'm done. That guy's really not going to talk to me at a party. I never met him. I don't know.
What I hear, nicest guy in town.
He sounds like it. He sounds like a real charmer.
Built canoes.
Oh, yeah.
I would love to hang out with him. Anyway, go ahead.
God. All right. So, this happened at Christmas time. God, I feel really bad about this, and I haven't had
give it to me.
The guts to call my mom and apologize for it. But is there a solution to yours?
No.
That's it. You got to bottle it up, let it go.
Let it go. Okay. Now I feel good about it.
Because mine might have
a thing to do.
A solver.
All right.
So at Christmas time, where I was sitting home watching TV with my mom, and it was an emotional time for her. She had just lost her cousin, and she was, you know, very emotional. And that Brad Garrett Frankenstein commercial came on. Did you see that this year?
No.
There was a commercial for, it's for the iPhone or for batteries or something. I can't remember. But it's Brad Garrett from Everybody Loves Raymond as Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
It's not comedic. It's like not funny. Like he walks in the snow down to this like town, this old crusty town, whatever, and he puts like Christmas lights in his neck bolts, and they light up, and he starts singing a Christmas carol to everybody, but everybody's like freaked out by him because it's Santa, because he's Frankenstein.
Yeah.
And he starts bombing, and then he gets like all self-conscious, and then a little girl comes forward and starts singing with him, and then everybody's like, oh, we're being the disgusting pieces of shit that human beings are.
Uh-huh.
We shouldn't judge this man because he doesn't look like us.
Uh-huh.
People still have to learn that lesson, apparently, in commercials.
What is it a commercial for? Light bulbs?
I feel like it's a commercial for the iPhone, because he orders... I can't remember. But anyway, the little girl starts singing with him, and then everybody sings, very beautiful and everything. My mom starts crying during the commercial. And I go, why are you crying? Please stop crying. And she goes, because I just want the world to be this way all the time for everybody. And I got very cross.
I
went, well, it will never be like that. Ever, 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 ever. So put it out of your head. I don't know
why. And in that moment, you became the monster. Yeah, the monster's no longer the Frankenstein.
Now, in my defense...
Yes. You'd had a few.
My mom and I were coming out of some sort of a political discussion.
Okay.
And I was a little annoyed at her take on politics, and then the fact that she started crying and being like, I just want the world to be a beautiful place. So that was part
right
of
after
it.
Kind of like saying Trump is the best.
She didn't say that, but right. Yeah. So that bothered me a little bit, and that kind of set me off. And but that's still no excuse. I still feel really bad for doing it. I feel really bad for saying it. And I should have been much, much more cognizant of the fact that she had lost somebody she loved very much a week or so before that. And, you know, her head was a little scattered. And
I think that that kind of, first off, when you're in a fragile emotional state, especially after somebody dies, commercials are built to manipulate that, you know?
Yeah.
The amount that I cried after my mom died, like anything would set me. Like I would see a bird walk across the street and I would be like, he made it. He fucking made it across the street. Boom. Tears just coming down, you know?
Yeah, I know. And yeah, well, let me...
Wait.
Okay.
I forgive what? You, Joe.
Wait, I wasn't ready for that yet.
Oh, shit. All right.
Because this is the last part.
Oh, I didn't realize there was more. Okay.
Kurt.
Yes.
I want the world to be like that all the time. And I wasn't able to admit it. That's the truth. That's the truth. And that's why it was really disgraceful.
And that's what I think that is the funniest part, and I've said it before, is that I think from people who don't know you, they think you're an angry guy. Maybe because of your crazy rant against Nick Offerman earlier.
It's not against, it's angry. And
but
for those
you're
listening,
anger,
it's not against Nick Offerman. It's against the way he acted. And I don't care for either the gesture, the pose of the hat.
All right, fine.
That's all I was saying.
The fact is your anger comes from a deep, deep, pussy-like sensitivity for the world. And you're just angry at the fact that it's not always like the whatever fucking light bulb commercial that your mom cried about. You wish it was.
I do.
You really do.
I do.
And that's where your anger comes from.
Yeah. I got to start wearing a hat.
To let people know.
Yeah. No, that it is. It's people will say that I'm an angry comic, and I say I'm not an angry comic. I'm an annoyed comic. I'm disappointed in the world.
You're disappointed.
I feel let down, which is why I called my special "You Let Me Down," because that's how I feel. I feel let down. I don't feel angry. I feel like, oh, you fucked me.
Yeah,
you fucked me. Great. No, I'll be over here playing with myself.
Joe.
Yeah.
I forgive you.
Thanks, Kurt. I should call my mom and apologize? Or
yeah,
no?
Your mom will have no memory of that.
I know, and every time I call my mom about a past thing like that, and I go, hey, I feel really bad, she's like, oh, it's in the past. What's behind us is behind
us. But I still think you should call.
Well, I'll call her anyway just to say hi.
Call her and just be like, hey, I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember this? Ask if she remembers it.
Okay.
And if she says no, then just be like, okay, don't worry about it. But if she says, oh, yeah, be like, I wanted to apologize because I also want the world to be like that. But that's what you have to say. You have to say, I also wish the world was like, yes, you have to.
Come on, man.
Yes, 100%. Because that's the most important part.
You're making me do that because you want to see me squirm.
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah, that can't also be the reason to do it,
though. No. But that's actually the thing that's the most important, because that's a deep connection. You're telling your mom, we're the same, you know?
Yeah.
We're the same, and that's the important part.
Okay.
Also, you squirming is just the bonus for me, you know? It's just a little bonus, a little ice cream on top of the cake.
Icing, schmuck.
No, I get ice cream on top. So.
All right. That's my task. But then you don't get a task for this week?
Give me a task.
I can't just make one up.
It seems like you get a lot of tasks in this podcast.
This is only my second one. You had one that
all
took
right,
you
that's true.
6 weeks to figure out.
2 weeks!
Yeah.
The last solo podcast that we did, it was brought up the fact that you are adopted.
Yes.
And I did not know that.
So this is a good transition into that.
Yeah. We're talking about your mom, and this is your adoptive mother.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you know that I'm not adopted, but I found out before my mom died that she had a kid before me?
No.
Yeah.
Who is it?
I don't know. She was 16. She was a Catholic, so she just went away to a convent for 6 months. She had the kid. They took the kid away, and then she just went back to high school, and no one ever talked about it. She never told anybody.
Holy shit.
Isn't that crazy? So I have no idea. I'm going to try and find him.
You know,
but I mean, what do I say to him? Do I just say like, hey, I just wanted to look you up and tell you your mom's dead?
Wait.
I mean, like, what do I do?
Wait till you're famous and do like what Oprah did. Did you see that Oprah?
No.
Oprah had like a sister and she didn't even know she had a sister.
Uh-huh.
And then like a year ago or something, she like found the sister. And then the sister went from being like this single mom who had to work all the time to being like Oprah's sister. And Oprah was like, I'll buy you a house, and like changed her life.
Really?
Yeah, now they're like super tight. And I'm like, this chick hit the jackpot.
I know, right?
God, that's awesome. Nothing like that's going to come out of my adoption.
Do you ever want to find out?
You know, I go back and forth with it. I did WTF a couple weeks ago, and Maren asked me the same thing. And I don't, at this very moment, no, I don't care.
Okay.
I don't seem to have a real interest in it. But there are times when I do, and by that I mean I'll go through stretches where I'll feel like I should probably do that. Maybe it's important. And for whatever reason, I don't end up doing it. And right now, I'm not in one of those stretches. So I don't know if that means I'll never feel that way again or if it's just how I feel right now. But
yeah.
But
is there a reason that you don't want to? Or just is like, I don't feel like a necessity?
I don't feel a strong necessity to do it. My parents adopted me when I was 9 days old. You know, they're wonderful people. They're all I've ever known as parents. And even if they weren't, I think I would still look at them as just my parents.
Right.
But you know, I've never not felt like I wasn't part of my own family.
Right. And I think that's the main reason my mom, I had asked her before she died, you know, like, would you want me to get in touch and try and find this person? And she was scared. She was just so scared that he didn't have a good life, you know, and that was
sure.
The fear that like kind of kept her from reaching out. And, you know, if you were a little older, you could maybe be my brother.
I say it all the time. Like, you know, I have a fear that I'll find my parents and they'll be living in some sort of Aladdin situation, you know.
I've seen Aladdin. What, they're living in a cave?
No, living in like a marketplace somewhere, and they have to have a monkey steal apples for them to eat or something, and then I'm going to have to like...
take care of them?
Yeah.
You're not reaching out because you don't want the financial responsibility.
Yeah, I don't
want
to have to like fucking pull a Temple of Doom and liberate my... They're impoverished in some prison temple somewhere. I've got to get a... You know, that's a... the other thought is too, what if they just suck?
Yeah.
What if they're just garbage people? You know, I don't know. You know, and then you go, well, what if so they're amazing people? And then there's a fear. I'll tell you the biggest fear. I mean, these are all sort of humorous fears, but like there's some truth to all of them. But the biggest fear to me is what if I met them and really clicked with them and suddenly was like, I like my new family. You know, I'm a little scared of that.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense. Because then you... Yeah, and then all of a sudden you have this tension between new mom and old mom.
Yeah, they got like...
The mom who put in all the work and the mom who didn't.
Yeah, so that's a little frightening to me.
Yeah.
And for my parents' sake. My parents have done so much for me. They've sacrificed so much over the years. They couldn't really have kids. You know, I was the only one. They're incredible people. So I would... And they've given me their blessing time and time again. We go find, it's your life. Like, this is something you need to do for yourself if you want to do it. We would never stop you and not encourage you. So they're truly just amazing people. But that also, as much as that is freeing and liberating, it also kind of is restricting for me because you don't want to hurt people.
Because they're so cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like a wife saying, like, honey, I love you so much. If you ever needed to go out and have sex with another woman, I get it. You'd be like, that's so beautiful and giving that I'm not going to do it.
It's so nice that you could find a way to involve having sex with your parents. So nice that that's the metaphor.
You know what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Your mom said, go out, find your other mom, fuck her. It's fine with us.
Jesus, God. You know what I mean.
Yeah. So, I mean, so what was the biggest, I mean, growing up adopted, was it a thing? Was it an issue? Did you talk about it a lot?
I knew it ever since I can remember. I don't remember being told.
Okay.
So no, it wasn't an issue. But I didn't know. I thought I was Italian by blood up until I was 12, and then I found my mom finally told me that I was not, in fact, Italian.
And do you know what you are?
Well, at the time, she said you're Italian and Egyptian. That's what the adoption agency told us, but we didn't tell anybody. Or excuse me, we didn't tell you until now because we didn't know how to tell you.
Okay.
I said okay, and then. Again, out of love, she said this, trust me, because it's going to sound terrible for a second, but out of love, she was like, don't tell anybody, because we lived in a pretty uniform
Italian neighborhood,
not just Italian, but it was pretty uniform, and it was, there was some palatable hate, you know, in the neighborhood.
Yeah. And this is in Philly, like, this is just like...
Well, suburbs of Philly, okay, yeah, but she was afraid. She was afraid that I would be... And I was already a kid that got picked on a lot, so she was very afraid that I would be harmed in some way.
Because of just the Egyptian part?
Yeah, that people wouldn't accept it.
Oh, interesting.
So I didn't...
That's interesting.
I didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, I guess that's the 80s for
until
you.
Until I was 18 or 17 or something. You know, so then you jump forward... However many years later, I'm in my 20s now, in the late 90s, whatever the hell it is, early aughts. And that's when I started feeling some stuff coming up.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you start to realize, oh, wait, I have abandonment issues.
Oh, interesting.
Because I was abandoned.
And that's all unconscious, because you've actually never had the actual experience of being abandoned because your parents were so cool. It's all unconscious.
Right. So you have abandoned. I had, and still to some extent have. I've worked on them a lot. But
and also, I mean, that actually even connects up with the thing we used to talk about on this podcast is this idea that you always want party to keep going. It's like, were you going home? What are you doing? You're going, why are you leaving? No, stay. No. Let's do a shot. Let's hang out. Keep this going.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
I do that a lot. I try not to do it now, but.
You're much better about it.
But yeah, I have abandonment issues. I have intimacy issues. So I always think that people are not, again, these are things I've worked on, but I'm just trying to speak. I'm trying to define them as I speak about them and not the place I'm at necessarily with them right now. But, you know, when you have intimacy issues, you think that everything is like a personal affront and you don't trust anybody.
That comes from intimacy issues? I had no idea. Because you do take, like, I've seen you go off where it's just like, oh, this is not about Joe, but Joe is taking it personal.
Well, like what? Like a guy wearing a vagina hat, you mean?
I can almost think it's just like, he's going to give me that kind of fucking bread? What does he think? Who does he think I am? I take this kind of bread? That's a made up example.
Is that a sandwich bread or
yeah,
money?
Yeah, it's a sandwich bread.
After a gig.
No, that's, you're going to give me, yeah, that's all of a sudden my lingo. He's going to give me this kind of bread.
I liked it. I found it exciting. So the intimacy issues, abandonment issues. Well, intimacy issues too, like with like getting, I had a thing for a long time where when I was if I was dating somebody, when it started to approach, like an actual relationship.
Yes.
Like we're going to have to commit now. Dude, I would get this feeling in my stomach. I can only equate it to this, and I swear to God, I'm not exaggerating. The worst comedy club I ever played in my life was Captain Brian's Off the Hook in Marco Island, Florida. I heard it closed. I fucking hope it did. It's a shithole. Captain Brian is a douchebag. It's the worst weekend I've ever had in my life anywhere.
Wow.
It was horrible.
Also, not surprising it's in Florida.
Yeah.
I've never had a good time doing comedy in Florida.
Yeah. So, Marco Island, Florida. Which is like rich people and old people. It just sucks. The whole thing sucked. So I remember the money for that gig was really bad. I had to rent a car and drive myself back and forth from the hotel because it was so far.
Ugh.
They didn't give me enough money to rent a car, so I was coming out of pocket. Everything sucked. And I remember pulling up to the club and realizing, oh my God, this is literally a Red Lobster knockoff. That they do a comedy show in. Not even that becomes a comedy club. They just do and I have to do a comedy show in front of people eating seafood.
No.
Like, I'm talking the themes and everything, like the nets on the wall and plastic crabs and all that shit. And I was sitting outside the club on the first night before the first show with this feeling in my stomach going, I can't do this. I can't get through four nights of this. How am I going to do this? Yeah. And I was so overwhelmed and terrified.
You had to do a Sunday show too?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
That's the feeling I used to get when I would get near a relationship. It was like, I can't do this. This is crazy. Like, this is so, it would be so daunting to me and terrifying.
To just get through what? The relationship? Like, just being near someone for that long?
Just all aspects of it.
So what, like, when, at what moment did you have that feeling? Like, when she was like, you're in bed together and she rolls over and just looks at you and it's just like, I love you.
Oh, we never got that far.
Okay, so not even that.
I had one girlfriend I dated that where we said I love you.
Uh-huh.
It was about 9 months.
Okay.
That ended horrifically. she turned out to be a woo-hoo. That's the other thing, too, is the one time I did get into a relationship with somebody like that, they turned out to be a real number.
Okay.
So that didn't help. But, and I was probably an asshole at the time, too, you know? No, it's just, I don't know. I can't explain it. It's just like when, you know, that's why the gig is such a good analogy. It's like when you're looking at that gig from the outside, it's not like this specific thing is going to happen and make me feel weird
right.
or scared. It's the entire thing is going to make me feel weird and scared. Anything that happens under that roof is going to make me feel weird and uncomfortable. So that's how it would be.
Yeah.
When I was approaching a relationship. I'm much better with it now than I was, but like, you know, so that stemmed from adoption.
Okay.
Because it comes, you know, there's an intimacy thing. There's this weird, you know, and then also my parents were very overprotective
mm-hmm.
because they couldn't conceive. And when they had me, when they got me, it was because they were on a Catholic adoption list and a secular adoption list. The Catholic list called them and said, you have to take your name off all other lists but ours. You have to believe that the Lord will provide.
Oh,
and they said,
fucking hell.
They said, okay, we will. And then they secretly didn't take their name off the other one. And the next day, the other one called.
Wow.
So my mom looks at that as like a miracle.
Yeah.
You know? Against the Catholic Church. Yeah, I think I told Marin this story, and he was like, "That's a miracle against God. It doesn't make any sense."
That's great.
But like, so they were overprotective. They weren't unfair. They were just overprotective. So you start to put all these things together. Then you get to 12 and find out, 12 years old. Oh, I'm not what I thought I was. That no big deal. And then later you're like, no, that is kind of weird. And then you start processing, I wasn't allowed to tell anybody what I was.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not blaming my mom for anything.
Of course.
I get why she did all of it.
Right.
But it's just how you end up dealing with it later. And then when I was 35, Joanne Grigioni, our friend from Comedy Central, our dear friend, she bought me a DNA test. And one of those like Ancestry.com things.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. Then I found out I wasn't fucking Egyptian or Italian. That's when I found out I was actually mostly Middle Eastern and African.
Oh, interesting.
By blood. So it's been a long haul of like all these weird things where it's like, remember you thought it was this? It's not this. Remember you thought it was this? It's not that either. It's actually this. And then the icing on the cake, because that's the right way to say it.
The ice cream on the cake.
Yeah, the icing on the cake was every single school. So my nursery school, my kindergarten, my grade school, my high school, all closed. They either don't exist anymore or they exist in different buildings than they existed. And my major and minor at my college were dissolved. So my past has been systematically
slowly
erased behind me as I've moved on through life. So it's hard to look back and my parents don't live in the house, you know.
So it's like you're walking down this hallway and it's everything's just crumbling behind
you. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that compounds the adoption stuff quite a bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's probably another reason I'm afraid. I don't know if afraid's the right word, but hesitant to go look for my parents, my biological parents, is because you're like, can I just rely on one thing? Can one thing not change?
Right.
You know
oh, that's
I mean?
Interesting. So then here's my question to you, because I've been struggling with whether or not to try and find my brother. Because like part of me is like, yeah, what am I going to tell him is it selfish of me just to like be like, well, I want to know who he is.
Right.
And also to be like, oh, look, I have a brother, another brother I didn't know about. Or, but is it just going to be like, hey, I wanted to look you up again to tell you that your mom's dead? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, there's nothing there for him. I don't know who his dad was. My mom never told me who the dad was. Just somebody she went to high school with, I think. So it's like, I don't know who the dad is, and his mom's dead. Is that, if someone reached out to you and was like, I'm your brother, your mom's dead, how would you feel?
I'd say that's a weird way to phrase it.
That's how I, also that's how I do it. Ring, ring. Hey, I'm your brother. Your mom's dead.
Yeah, that's not what you're, I would be thrilled to hear from him. And that's not what you're reaching out to do. You're not reaching out to say, hey, your mom died. I'm your brother. You're reaching out to say, hey, man, we have the same mom. And
I've been on Conan.
And yeah, I'm like a real shitty version of this Oprah thing that you heard about.
I got no money to give you. I got nothing. If anything, I might have to borrow money from you. I hope you're doing well.
Yeah, no, I would look at it as, hey, man, we had the same mom, and unfortunately she passed, which is a very sad thing, but life is about changes and going through new doorways, and loss gives to gain and all these things.
And by the way, is your dick like average size?
And it inspired me to find you.
Yeah, all right.
You know,
I mean, like, I have no idea if I can.
I think that's actually a very beautiful thing.
I don't know if I can, only because I don't know, now that everybody, I mean, she's gone and I don't know the dad, so I don't know if she told anyone, and my grandmother's dead, so I don't know if she, if how I would find what convent she was taken to for those six
months.
Well,
that's your task this week, is to find your brother.
No, wait a second. All you got to do is call your mom and apologize. I've got to find my missing brother?
No, but I think...
Should I take the first step? Should I contact like a private eye?
You got to be careful, because
why?
that is the first step, and that's the first step that I tried to take with the adoption thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned quickly that private eyes are exactly like any other business. There were so many on like Yelp and stuff where, yeah, they were like, do not hire this man. He will take your money. He will do nothing. Like, I was like, oh God. So you got to be really careful with getting involved with the right, you know, the private eyes are like movers, apparently. Like,
I fucking hate movers.
They can really fuck you. So I would say your task is not to hire a private eye.
Okay.
I would say your task is to go home and really give this some serious thought. Not that you haven't, but to give it some serious thought outside of, hey, I don't know, what do I call him and say your mom? You know, the way you were saying
it.
But also,
I think I still don't, I have no idea how to even begin.
Don't worry about that right now.
Is there a Catholic?
I think your task is to figure out whether you actually want to do it or not.
I do want to do it. I think I do want to do it.
100%.
Yes.
All right. I'm trying to buy you some time here, Kurt, so
no,
you don't
no,
have
no.
to go call a private investigator tomorrow.
But I mean, that's my question. Is the next step a private eye? Or is the next step?
I guess so.
I fucking don't know.
Yeah, look into it. Yeah.
Actually, here's the next step.
Call your sister. See if she has any info. How about that?
It's all different. I have seven sisters and one brother. They're all from my dad. So they have no idea.
So your mom is the only one you came from.
Yeah. Well, and this other guy.
Well, I know.
So this, yeah.
But I'm saying that you know. Do you have an uncle?
Does she have an uncle, a brother, or sister?
Yes,
she has a half brother and half sister that I don't think she went to high school with. Call them first. Okay. See, that's the tough part also.
Well, it's awkward.
No.
What?
The one who would know is my aunt, and she's a nun. And she's like this level of Catholic that's like it's like takes voodoo to like the next level. It's like she just prays to saints, and it's like saints run the world and angels are everywhere.
Yeah, that's all Catholics.
But I think she would like deny that it happened.
I think you might be surprised. I went to Catholic school. My dad's a deacon in the Catholic Church. I've known a lot of nuns and priests in my day.
I have too. I went to, you know, all of my education was from nuns and priests.
They're nuns and brothers. Most of them were much more down to earth than you think. So Not this order.
This order is like...
Look, give it a try.
All right.
What, she going to yell at you?
No, she's going to be real weird.
All right, well then let her be real weird.
Okay.
We can get real fucking weird back.
All right, so that's my
task.
My job to
contact
reach out to the nun.
And the uncle.
I'll see. That, I mean, that's a whole other.
All right.
We'll talk about that later.
All right.
All right.
Fair enough. This was a good talk today.
Good talk.
Heavy.
Man.
Nick Offerman, I got nothing against you. It was just the scenario. That's all.
Nick Offerman, let's be friends. Let's go camping together. If you're listening to this, March 3rd, my Comedy Central special debuts at midnight on Comedy Central. And then 2 days later, you can pick it up on a digital and the album. And, of course, you should go listen to Joe's Comedy Central Hour that will have already come out. Came out.
Yeah,
February
mine's
3rd.
Out already. You can find it online for download. And
thank you to everybody here. Farrell, thank you to you, Joe.
Thanks, y'all.